Welcome to Global Expressions, where we have international students interview professors with international backgrounds to learn their unique journey to the US. Hi, I'm Angela, and I'm a freshman studying psychology and biology.
Hi, I'm Ray. I'm a freshman studying government and law.
And today we are very happy to have Professor Park with us. Professor Park, could you please introduce yourself a little bit?
Of course. Well, thank you for having me, first of all. My name is Soyeon Park. I am a professor of international relations in the Department of Government and Law, and I'm also the chair of the Asian Studies program.
Cool. I know that you have some international experiences in terms of education. Can you talk a little bit about your educational journey?
Yeah, so I could start at multiple different points in answering that question, but I think I'll start at the way beginning. So I first arrived in the U.S. As a second grader, so I was in elementary school. My father's job brought him overseas to the U.S., and so I went to elementary school in South Korea, in Seoul, and in the Los Angeles area in the United States, and then I went back. And then I went to middle school in South Korea, and I went to high school in Canada, actually, in Toronto. And then I went back for my bachelor. So I did my college undergraduate education in South Korea and did a master's there also, and then came to the U.S. for my PhD. And cool. Since then, I've been doing postdocs and working all throughout the United States.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that's a cool experience. So, Professor Park, what do you think attracts you the most at Lafayette College?
So what is most attractive about Lafayette College? So I remember when I interviewed here, as part of my interview, I had the opportunity to meet with students. And the emphasis on that faculty-student interaction, I could really see myself here, you know, being involved in this kind of a smaller, close-knit campus community. And so that's what attracted me. Another reason is the colleagues I have. So in my department, I have amazing colleagues who are world-class teachers and scholars, and also people who I've grown to really love and appreciate as not just colleagues, but mentors as well. And so that's been really important, I think. If I look back on my last 15 years, I really couldn't have done this or couldn't have done or gone through my professional development in the way that I was able to without the help and guidance and really support of my colleagues who are now friends and mentors. So that's, I think, unique about Lafayette, this community, the people here. And I know you can say that about any organization, but I think that's true. The happiest of my friends and colleagues elsewhere are those who have good people around them. So I think the people, all of us, all of you, this is what makes Lafayette such an enjoyable community to work in.
Yeah, I think that's also why a lot of the students here also really enjoys Lafayette, because it's like such a small and close-knit community. It's really nice to be in. So let's talk a little bit about your research career and overall. So how did you start your interest in gov law?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I will also say right off the bat, and I tell this to my advisees too, who are often struggling to come up with their niche area or even coming up with their major. It took me a very long time to figure out what I wanted to do. So when I did my bachelor's, my undergraduate degree, actually in South Korea, you can't change majors. So you have to pick your major, you take a college entrance exam, you get into that major, and then that's it. That's your 4 years. And so as a high schooler, I thought, all right, what do I like to do? I like to read. I like to write. I like to travel. I like to eat, new and try and eat new food. I'm going to travel the world and be a journalist. So I really wanted to be a journalist. I also, since little, because I had lived in different cultures, always liked this idea of comparing what I'm going through right now with, all right, how would people in other countries see this? And so I think from a very early on, I liked this, I was doing this constantly, the comparative analysis. And so when it came time for me to pick a major for college, I decided to do communications in the hopes of becoming a journalist. And I was on my way, I was interviewing for newspaper jobs and broadcasting stations or TV jobs. And then finally, my last semester of my senior year, I took this course on international relations, and I loved it. I fell in love. And so I decided, all right, What do I do? Like, do I get a job and make money first or and become gainfully employed? Or do I try this new thing and go study some more? And I talked to mentors and I, you know, really thought about it for a long time and decided, all right, I can always come back to journalism, but it didn't seem like it would be as easy for me to go back to school, or at least that was what my high school self was thinking, and college self was thinking. And so I decided to give graduate school a try. So I got my master's in international relations, and as you can see, I loved it so much that I kept going, right? So I came to the U.S. to get my PhD, and yeah, I mean, since that time, I've been loving what I do. So it took me a long time to get here, but I couldn't imagine my life any other way.
It's really incorrigible, Professor. Yeah. So what's the difference between here versus other countries you have studied at?
So I think what I've experienced, so now I've studied in the U.S., I've studied in South Korea, I've done field work and done research and lived in Japan, Tokyo, Japan. And I think what I can say is that in Asia, again, I don't want to overgeneralize, in Asia, at least in my generation, when I was doing political science and international relations, it was a little bit more male-dominated. So for me, it was hard to see myself, right, one day becoming a professor. And I think when I came to the U.S., similarly, my department was more mixed where I did my degree. But even so, the people in my particular area doing international relations and security studies, it was very much more male-dominated. And so I think what I've been happy to see, especially around the world, not just in the U.S., is that we're seeing more of a gender balance. And it's really encouraging when I'm at a conference and I'm on a panel and it's with three other women, and you know, more mixed gender composition, because I think the conversations are different. I remember somebody telling me, so I attended this graduate student conference. So it was a conference just for graduate students and organized by graduate students, and it was for women. It was called Women in International Security, and we all kind of at one point looked at each other. Did you notice that? Did you hear that? How we're talking about the issues is very different from when we're back home in our home institutions and we're having to like duke it out with the men. And again, I don't want to grossly oversimplify or, you know, stereotype the gender stereotypes here, but I think, you know, that was an eye-opening moment for me, that it doesn't have to be that way and that kind of like combative, no, like I'm going to, your point is invalid, you know, it's wrong, like that very combative mode of graduate school debates and seminars. And so I have taken that to heart. And I think in my career have always sought that out to try to allow for different ways of engaging in debate and also to like be very explicit about modeling that for students as well. You don't have to be the loudest voice in the room to get your point heard or to get your point across. It's how you say it. It's, you know, what kind of evidence do you use? It's the framing of the question itself, often the tone with which you make your points. And I think, again, this doesn't just have to be about women doing it, but I do think that different perspectives in any room helps make that debate much more, like just it enriches the experience for everybody in the room.
Yeah, for sure. That will definitely allow for more like diversity and
sure.
more opinions, and they'll be so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think was the cultural shock for you when you studied or worked abroad?
Yeah, so I think I was shielded from some of the shock just because I had lived in the U.S. and in Canada, and so the you know, North American society for some time when I was little. However, I think something that really struck me was the different styles of leadership. I think in Asia, you know, I don't think I have a lot of Confucian right, kind of norms still in me, but I do think growing up in Asia and studying in Asia, you were always taught, or I was taught, that you know, leadership is about being humble and about kind of like leading, but sometimes from behind, and more about group harmony, right? Again, I'm simplifying things here, but in general, right, the group harmony was really, really the core of leadership. Whereas here, what I learned was you have to do a little bit more of like asserting what your views are. And leadership is about, you know, kind of like being out there, like you're the voice for the group and you're representing. And you have elements of both in Asia and in the West largely, right? North America and in Europe. But I think maybe the emphasis was a little bit different. So I think when I came here and started working at Lafayette, and as I worked up the ranks, you know, from being assistant professor to associate professor and now professor, I think my ideas of leadership and what that looks like have evolved. I mean, I think I still have my own take on it and my own style of leadership, and I'm still learning. I'm still not going to be the loudest voice in the room. I'm not always the one initiating conversations all the time, but I think I've learned to do it more because I recognize that my audience is different. And I think that is a universal thing, right? Leadership is understanding your audience and your community and what you're doing for, who you're talking to, and who the constituents are and who you're advocating for. And I think that's the one thing I had to change. So I don't know if that's a culture shock necessarily, but understanding that styles of leadership and even like how to make friends, what personal space looks like in different societies, right? All of these things they impact your decisions and how you make friends and how you become a leader. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think that's also very valid for a lot of the international students, like having to adapt to new environment, new friendship, and new just way of like learning and things. Because when I was little, I was born in China, but I moved to New Zealand when I was really little.
Okay.
So I think I also had to like go through some of that.
Okay. I'm glad this resonates with you. So it's not just me. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sure, Professor. You mentioned about something like gender issues and some different cultures. Mm-hmm. And is there anything hard for you to adjust when you study abroad in different countries?
Yeah, let's see. So what were some things? Definitely the expectation of... let me put it this way. I think because I didn't start out as a political scientist, I didn't do a political science degree as an undergraduate. It was a lot more challenging for me to catch up, I think, in my graduate seminars. Like, I did the work, but it was clear to me that students who had the major in political science as an undergrad had more of the background. And so I just remember having to work really hard to feel like I've caught up. And I think we have a term for that these days. And I think I was doing fine, but I never fully felt like I had caught up. And I know you all know what I'm referring to. It's the imposter syndrome, right? And so I think never feeling like, oh, wait, did I say that right? Am I fitting in? Do I want to fit in? You know, that constant negotiation with yourself of, I want to contribute, but I also, like, am I trying too hard, right? Should I just be myself, right? Like that kind of constant negotiation happens, believe it or not, still after college, after graduate school, after years of being in the professional workforce. I think it's something that, I don't know if it'll fully go away. But I will say, now though, it doesn't give me anxiety. It makes me actually appreciate the fact that I am in a position to think about it more clearly. And I think it's actually good. It motivates me, right? Because I want to be curious. I want to remain curious about what makes me, but also what I am modeling, right? It allows me to think about if I'm too persuaded by the imposter syndrome, I'm not modeling this for my students, right? I'm modeling that for my students, in other words, right? So I don't want to do that. So it kind of motivates me to just like kind of, you know, get over yourself, like just do it, you know, just get out there and do it. And so I think it's now serves as more of a push, and it gives me additional strength rather than being a source of anxiety.
I think that's also... I wouldn't say like advice, but it's also a very good, I guess, thing to tell international students in general. Like, it's okay that you are struggling, you're having identity crisis right now. Right. It will help you in the future potentially.
I hope so, and I think so. I think it served me well. I mean, obviously, there's ups and downs, right? Mm-hmm. It's not serving you well all the time. Of course, you have moments of doubt, but it's those moments of doubt and what you do with it that I think can help you move forward. That would be my message.
Mm-hmm. And as someone with an international background, how did you find like a sense of community on campus, and what do you think that looked like for you?
Yeah, so... So this is now my own personal trajectory, but when I was a child, I was so very shy. And I still am I consider myself a shy person. And I think that's a little bit different from being introverted. I think I'm shy in the sense that I'm not always assertive about, this is what I want to do, right? But again, living in the U.S. for a long time now and developing as a professional, I've learned that, think about it this other way. If you tell yourself, all right, you're shy, so you're not going to initiate anything, well, nobody's going to come and, do that work for you. So I started to reframe it in my mind as, look, I love people. I like friends. I like having friends. So it's on you, right? It's on me. So I started doing more things, reaching out to more people. I love to cook and share food. So I've made friends that way where we invite people over for dinner and we get invited back. And it's a good way to make friends. I've joined campus, but also community organizations. Like I volunteer. I also have joined a book club. And so I think I've really pushed myself to come out of my shell and challenge myself to go meet people, like go say hi to neighbors. Whereas in the past, I think I would have been shy and kind of waited for them to come to me. Now when a new neighbor moves in to the house across the street, like my husband and I will go over and say, hi, we're so-and-so and we're so happy to have you. And, we'll invite them over. And like that kind of thing is something that didn't come naturally to me and I've had to learn. And I think I'm so much happier and better for it. But it's work, right? It's really challenging. Again, I want to emphasize this. This is not in my nature. This isn't something that I immediately, the first thought that jumped to me or jumped in my mind when I was growing up, this wasn't, and also it wasn't really modeled. I don't think my parents were super outgoing like that either. So it's something that, it's a skill set that I've had to newly learn and develop. But it's certainly, it served me well.
Thank you. So, yeah, we know that you did not study the political science as a major. Mm-hmm. And so what would you be if you were not a professor?
So if I weren't a professor, so let's see, if I hadn't gone to grad school, I guess I would have been a journalist, right? I don't know if I would have stayed, but I think, that would have been a good job for me as well. Maybe, maybe not. So maybe a journalist. But I also, I think I would have loved to have been a social worker or a psychiatrist. I love understanding people and their thought processes and their emotions. And I like analyzing that. And so I actually did consider psychology as my major for a while. So maybe that. The other thing is, I didn't even know such a job existed. I just learned recently that there are professional organizers. Like, they'll help you organize your house or your workplace or what. I mean, that is my, it gives me joy and relaxes me. I love to organize things and have things tidied up. And I've now moved so much that, as a grad student, I was moving apartments every year. I have it down to a science. I'm a good, I can pack, I can also with suitcases. I think I might be a professional organizer.
I think I'll really need an organizer.
Well, you know who to come to. You know where my office is located. Yeah.
Because I have a lot of stuff and I literally don't know what to bring, what to throw, what to leave behind.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy to be that voice that's behind you, right? Telling you, all right, you need this, you don't need this.
And I know that you're also actively participating in cultural clubs on campus and that you're the advisor for the Asian Cultural Association Club. What mm-hmm. do you think that's like for you?
So it's been an amazing opportunity to meet students on campus that I wouldn't necessarily come into contact with. So, normally the students I see are my advisees in the department. within government and law, but also in Asian studies, or students who take my classes. And ACA, I think, having worked with ACA for the past, three, 4 years now, students from more corners of campus that I wouldn't normally have in classes. Like, for example, last year's ACA co-president, one of the co-presidents was Emily Rotola, and mm-hmm. she's an engineer. So there was really no reason for me to have met her other than through ACA. And so it's really nice to make those new connections and also to help elevate your voices, right? The voices of AAPI students. I think I got involved as Asian Studies Program Chair because when I became chair, it was during the pandemic, and there weren't AAPI Heritage Month events happening, again, largely because of the pandemic, but also just for various other reasons. A big reason was that it was in May. Everybody's busy in May, and everybody's calendars are full. But I think I was really motivated by the students of ACA and other voices on campus who really wanted to make this happen, right? That shouldn't let because it's May, that shouldn't be used as an excuse to not do this. And so, and it was especially more important because of the rising anti-Asian discrimination and bias during the pandemic. And so it's been a really, really rewarding experience for me.
Yeah, I think it's actually happening right now, the AAPI month. Mm-hmm. So it's going really well.
Good, good. I'm glad you think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Professor, to joining us and share your experience. That's really amazing. So if you could give one piece of advice of international students, what would it be?
Yeah, so that's a really important question. So I think there's so much we can say and we can talk about. I would love to actually, before I give advice, I would love to hear what your thoughts are, everybody's thoughts on, but because we don't have time to do that, what I might suggest is this. I think as international students, and because I've been there myself, we often think about, will the campus community accept me? Like, will I fit in? But rather than focusing on that, I would encourage all of you to think about the value you bring to the table, right? You are here, and you're adding to the different puzzle pieces of the campus community. So you're contributing just by being here. And so I think, don't be bogged down by, or don't, torture yourself, trying to contort yourself to fit in or to feel like you belong, but rather really be, just own the fact that you are contributing already so much, right? You're bringing your diverse experiences, your perspectives, and you come from all corners of the world, right? And so that's what makes Lafayette this vibrant community. And so really think about the value you're adding and be proud of it and, do more with it, right? Like just participate, join things, lend your voice, right? Speak out on issues that matter to you, that you think are unjust, right? This is your opportunity to really make your mark and also to take what you can out of studying abroad, right? Being in the U.S. and being at Lafayette. And so make it entirely your own experience. Don't worry so much about do I want to be, the typical Lafayette student, right? Less about that, but about make your experience your own.
Yeah, I think that's a really good piece of advice. I'll definitely keep in mind, and also really good for like everyone else listening to the podcast right now. And I think that's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us, and join us next time for a new episode of Global Expressions Podcast. Bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.